The 1986 Chernobyl disaster forced a mass evacuation, as many people remember. Soviet authorities cleared out a 20-mile zone around the nuclear plant in Ukraine. They removed 100,000 people. Today, Chernobyl's remaining reactors are shut down, and that zone remains mostly deserted. But health warnings and the lack of basic services have not prevented a few people from returning to live there. NPR's Lauren Sheets paid them a visit.
There are almost no cars on the road from Kiev to Chernobyl. The scenery is misleadingly pristine, rolling hills dotted with tall pine trees, dusted with a fresh layer of crystal white snow. It looks more like a national park in the northern U.S. than the gateway to the scene of the world's worst nuclear disaster. There are two so-called exclusion zones around Chernobyl. One is 30 kilometers back. A second stricter roadblock comes at the 10-kilometer mark. Only those with special permission are allowed to enter. Victor, a worker with a Geiger counter, checks every vehicle coming out of the area for radiation. Victor says those vehicles that stray from the main road can kick up radioactive residue. The readings can register hundreds of times normal.
So this was checkpoint Lilov, and we are now in the 10-kilometer exclusion zone, the zone of strict control. And within the 30-kilometer exclusion zone, some people still live. But here, within 10-kilometer exclusion zone, nobody lives. People only work here.
Rima Kiselitsa has worked in Chernobyl for a decade. She escorts scientists and other experts around the zone. For the workers who still man the now decommissioned nuclear station, all food and materials are shipped in from the outside.
So the problem is concentration of radionuclides in the soil. And that's why here in 10-kilometer exclusion zone, hunting, fishing, any agricultural activity, picking mushrooms and berries in the forest is forbidden.
Just a half mile down the road from the Chernobyl plant, whose reactor number 4 is still covered with a giant concrete sarcophagus, is the city of Pripyat. It used to be home to the plant staff, scientists, technicians, and their families. But in this once bustling city, there's now a deafening silence. On Pripyat's deserted main square, you can hear a pin drop.
It's completely abandoned. It's a ghost town. There's 16-story buildings which have been standing here exactly the way they were left when all of the workers were evacuated after the accident in 1986. It's a very eerie place, overgrown, a ghost town of a city of 50,000 people.
In the middle of Pripyat, there's a huge rusting Ferris wheel which was completed on the eve of the accident but never switched on. Posters inside the main telephone office trumpet the upcoming May 1st holiday in 1986, just days before the accident. Letters and papers are strewn around on the floor of the office. Rima Kiselitsa says over the years, scavengers have carted off the windows and other belongings left behind in Pripyat, despite the fact that the articles were contaminated by radiation. Once a year, every May, former residents are allowed to come back to visit for a few hours.
People can visit their old apartments.
Yes, and this is a heartbreaking experience, you see, because especially when it is first time coming, people who left the town leaving everything, you know, and when they come and they see that the apartment is stripped of all furniture, of everything, and sometimes it's just vandalized.
Nina Melnick was an announcer for Pripyat's local radio station when the reactor blew up. She recalls for how 2 days Soviet authorities led the city's people to believe there'd only been a minor fire at the plant. Then, Melnick says, she was suddenly given a piece of paper to read on the air.
Just as some people announced the start of World War II, I got to announce the beginning of the nuclear war and the evacuation.
Melnick told the residents of Pripyat that they would be coming back in 2 days. Instead, it's been 18 years. Scientists say it will be 30,000 years before it's safe to live in Pripyat again. The levels of contamination here are some of the highest in the Chernobyl zone, with concentrations of plutonium, strontium-90, and cesium-137 in the ground. And although no one may ever live in Pripyat again, a few residents have trickled back to the wider 30-kilometer zone around Chernobyl. In all, about 400 people out of an original population of 100,000. Nina Melnick is one of them. She now lives in the actual town of Chernobyl, 15 kilometers away from the plant that bears its name. Melnik's house, which has a garden and a small sauna in the yard, is easy to find. It's the only one in her street which isn't abandoned or falling down. She runs a group which promotes the rights of those who choose to stay here. At Melnik's house, the radiation levels are about 3 times normal background levels. She says she isn't worried.
Nobody even thinks about this anymore. The word radiation has gone out of our vocabulary. People return because economic circumstances force them to, or because of nostalgia, especially the people who are over 50. Without a piece of land under his feet, a person has no essence. Here, there is everything: forest, land, and a river.
Officially, the entire 30-kilometer area around the Chernobyl plant is still considered a mandatory evacuation zone. And until a few years ago, the Ukrainian authorities actively prevented former residents from returning. Some insisted, however. At the end of a long road, the village of Opachichi rises into sight along a snow-swept plain, like some movie set out of Dr. Zhivago. Anastasia Chikolovits is 80. Her husband Kolya is 78. They're among the just 20 of the original 2,000 residents left in Opachichi. There's no post office here and no stores. The elderly couple keeps chickens and grows vegetables. They buy bread with their small monthly pensions. Anastasia is dressed in a tattered blouse. She makes soup on an ancient wood stove in the main room. After the nuclear accident, the couple was given a new apartment in another city, but they left after just one winter, ignoring warnings about radiation. What difference does it make where we die? Anastasia says, we might as well die on our own land, in our own house. You couldn't take us away from here in handcuffs. Anastasia's prized possession is her homemade bread moonshine, or samagon. Though it may be hard to understand who would steal potentially radioactive liquor, Anastasia keeps it locked away in an old steam trunk. With the only entertainment an old radio with sticky knobs, the homebrew leavens the long winter nights, and Anastasia brags she can outdrink her husband of 60 years. There's little discussion of the Chernobyl tragedy at this table, or that the mostly elderly generation of diehards living in the zone now may be the last for generations to come. Lawrence Sheets, NPR News.